You're listening to the Great Coaches Podcast.
Hi everyone, Paul here, and just a quick message from me to let you know that if you are looking to improve the performance of your team, no matter whether it is a work, sporting or community one, then we've developed some tools to help. On the website, you will find our Thriving Teams Diagnostic, which uses insights from the more than 200 great coaches we have interviewed to challenge you with a series of questions to help you understand how your team is performing. It's free and only takes a few minutes to complete. If you'd like to know more, you can check out our website, thegreatcoachespodcast.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Welcome to the Great Coaches Podcast.
To me, being perfect is not about that scoreboard out there.
This is a chance of a lifetime.
When you can understand the person, you can then work towards a common goal.
We are all on the same team.
Know your role and do it to the best of your ability.
Focus on the fundamentals that we've gone over time and time again.
Your defense has got to be better.
Leave no doubt tonight.
Great moments are born from great opportunity.
Hello and welcome to the Great Coaches Podcast. My name is Paul Barnett, and this week we continue our exploration of thriving teams, what makes them tick, and how you can move your team closer to becoming one with the great coach Shane McLeod. Shane is a former New Zealand field hockey player and now coach. He transitioned into coaching while still playing and coached teams in Europe before becoming the Belgium women's team coach in 2002. In 2007, he moved back to New Zealand and led the men's team at the 2008 and 2012 Olympics. He then headed back to Belgium, winning two national titles before becoming the men's national team coach in 2015. And he went on to take that team from a world ranking of 15 all the way to number one. Along the way, they won silver at the 2016 Olympics, the 2017 and 2019 European Championships, and the 2019 and 2020 FIH Pro League. And then it was gold at the 2018 Men's Hockey World Cup and the 2020 Olympic Games. Shane is calm, thoughtful, and at the same time, deeply inspiring. Some of the ideas from the interview that stood out for me were how the feedback he was given as a player, which was that the selectors thought he liked the idea of playing for New Zealand more than he actually wanted to play for New Zealand, went on to inform the way he now gives feedback to people so that he doesn't deter them from wanting to be better. The process he has in place to encourage athletes to develop their self-leadership, and the exercise he used to get the players themselves to select the team, and how he used this to identify the strengths of each individual and the players within the team who were the glue that kept everyone connected. And just before we go to the interview, today's podcast is brought to you by the Macquarie University Business School's MBA program. Designed to empower, challenge, and transform, the Macquarie MBA gives you the business skills and knowledge you need to succeed in an evolving global economy. The program bridges the gap between theory and real-world application, bringing together world-leading professors, executives, and industry partners to teach you how business can be used for good. I have just started working with the team at Macquarie on some projects and can attest to the quality of the people and material. To find out more, search for Macquarie University Business School's MBA. And now, please enjoy our interview with Shane McLeod.
You're listening to the Great Coaches Podcast.
Hello, Shane McLeod, and welcome to the Great Coaches Podcast.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for the invitation. I'm looking forward to it.
Looking forward to it as well, Shane. And I'm joined, of course, by my colleague, Professor Eric Knight from Macquarie Business School. How are you, Eric?
I'm well, Paul.
Very much looking forward to getting into this discussion today on all things teams and leadership. But Shane, as we always do, could we just start with a simple question? Where are you in the world and what have you been up to so far today?
Yeah, so I'm in Spain at the moment. So we're in a preparation tournament, preparing for the qualifying tournament to go to the Paris Olympics. So we have five games here, and today we've finished off our third game. Our first was against India, second was against France, and today we played up against Spain, which was the local side. So we're just going through all those processes, getting selection in order and our game in order. But yeah, it's a great place to be at this time of the year. The weather's actually pretty good compared to the rest of Europe and so on. So we're enjoying it. We've had three wins, so it always makes the trip even nicer.
Well, it's a little late at night there, so we do appreciate you coming on to talk to us about all things field hockey. Shane, could I start by just, well, let's begin at the start. You were introduced to hockey through your aunt, and she was a manager of the national women's team back in New Zealand. So tell us a little bit about how that experience shaped you.
Yeah, look, I think everyone gets introduced, or it's always a nice way to find out where that passion's come from and what's driven that passion. And probably I was lucky enough to be surrounded by someone that shared a very similar passion. And I'm not sure if I love the game because of the game itself or I grew to love it, but I certainly know that I love my auntie. And she used to take me down to hockey as a young fella. And the experience itself was spending time with someone and then falling in love with all of the things in and around the game, you know, the people, the rituals, the camaraderie, the winning, the losing, all those type of things I found really intriguing as a youngster. And that kind of triggered my passion for the game. And I guess in a way it started to lay the path that I ended up following. You know, I without really knowing it at an early stage, I started to be attracted to those things that in the end became the skill sets that I acquired to become coaching, you know, one of the best field hockey teams in the world. But you don't know it at the time, you know. And so that was my early introduction. So was it because of her that I loved the game? Probably, but it was certainly because of her that I spent so much time surrounded by the game.
You played for representative teams and you did represent New Zealand, but the selectors gave you this feedback that they thought you liked the idea of playing for New Zealand more than you actually wanted to play for New Zealand, which I imagine was pretty hard feedback. But how did it go on to shape you when you became a leader?
Yeah, well, that line's probably a bit, it's stuck with me, but there's probably more of a backstory to it. You know, like I did always want to play for New Zealand. And I think the comment that was given to me after a missed selection, you know, it kind of shapes you. And I think it does one of two things. One, it builds a resolve that look, that's rubbish and I really want to prove them wrong and so on. Well, the second, it pushes you in a different direction. And for me, it was kind of a little bit of so demotivating that I thought, look, I've given everything. I've tried everything. I've done everything. And it's not being recognized, you know, and therefore, you know, maybe it, maybe it's not my calling. Maybe I need to be doing something else. And it kind of shifted me into the coaching field. But what it has done is it's made me very, very mindful of comments that you say as a coach. Players grab hold of things, and what might have been a throwaway line from a coach at the time became something that was that became really important to me. You know, I never wanted to say that to a player, or never have a player take a message in a way that ever deterred them from being better. You know, and I think that's one of the responsibilities that leaders have and coaches have. You know, you have to be very careful that you don't crush players and their hopes. You have to be honest with them for sure, but the degree of tact and subtleness that you have to have is really important.
Shane, building on that, I mean, you've said elsewhere that you've got a great love of working with people from different cultures, different places, different perspectives. Can you speak a little bit to your experience in what it takes to build connection with groups of people that are coming from diverse backgrounds?
Yeah, well, look, I've been lucky to travel, you know, and that's given me it's given me a glimpse into the variety and the different cultures that are built up, and the different value systems and that around the world. But probably the biggest diversity that you see is actually is not how do I describe this? It's more the makeup of individual people. You know, like if someone's an extrovert or an introvert, or if they're, you know, very agreeable, or those type of things, actually is one of the biggest differences that you see in teams. You know, and when I came to Belgium, one of the things that's incredibly interesting about the team that I've been working with is you have a French-speaking part of the country and you have a Flemish-speaking part of the country. And in the past, what had happened with coaches before me is that if he was a French-speaking coach, the French players, they would have an affinity with them. They'd feel very comfortable with them. And the Flemish-speaking, not so much. They'd feel a little bit like outsiders and so on. And vice versa, if it was a Dutch coach that spoke Flemish, the same thing would happen in reverse. And kind of because I've been gifted with the ability to not speak either of those languages overly well, I sit in this place that can observe quite easily and to appreciate the differences in your players and promote those differences and that diversity is really important. It just makes the conversations you have so much richer. It means that the qualities that you bring out are always of much greater quality than if you just, you know, if you have everyone exactly the same and you think everyone's exactly the same. So that was, I've been lucky enough to observe that. And there's in every team, you have different personalities, which is really your greatest diversity, not necessarily the culture or where they've come from, but how they think because of that culture or where they've come from.
So I wondered if you could give us an example of how you have brought that out. And look, you've said, you know, in the past that, you know, when you're looking to build a team, you're not only creating purpose to that team, but also making sure that the people find meaning in their individual tasks and roles within that team. So I wondered if, you know, maybe in your coaching role for the national team in Belgium, just speak a little bit to some of the activities that you've done or the conversations that you engender to help build that purpose, both collective and individual.
Yeah, probably the first thing that you do when you go into a group is you try and find where the group is at, you know. And I've been really lucky to work with some talented people, and I had a very gifted assistant coach that actually had played for Belgium and then had moved very quickly from playing into the coaching staff. And him and I worked together quite a lot, and we sat and we discussed what are the needs for this particular group, and we came up with kind of five things. But the first was that there was no appreciation of the diversity. So they players tended to, when they all came together, would tend to eat in clusters and talk in clusters and their club groups, basically. And so what we wanted to try and do is we wanted to break down that particular thing. So we took the group to South Africa one time, and it was just before the Olympics, or 10 months before the Olympics. And we really wanted to shift the group on, but we wanted to see where we were starting from. And so what we did on the first 3 days was that we plotted where each of the players sat in the dining room, so for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And what was really interesting is that they sat in exactly the same place for all of those meals, and the table settings were round tables, and so they would sit with players from What Ducks would be at this one, players from Dragon, from Braxcatter, and so on. So that was one thing, but there was also like this imaginary divide in the dining hall or dining room where the French players were sitting and the Flemish players were sitting. And so we thought, look, we've got to change this. And so we did a whole series of type of speed dating type of things, you know, like not the swipe left and swipe right of the modern generation, the old school way where you sat in front of the person and you spoke to them and you'd tell them a couple of things that they did really well, and then one interesting thing that you found about how they operated and so on. When we started to do these type of activities, we noticed some things. We noticed that there was a change in the seating. So they would, rather than just sitting in their cluster group, whoever they walked in with, they would sit down and they would start having a conversation, whether it was revisiting what was said earlier or whatever. And we also noticed that the volume in the room got louder and louder, you know. So as the breakdowns of the small cliques evaporated, the forming of this bigger group, we called it our circle of trust, started to grow larger and larger. And it was, you know, it was a really interesting thing to observe. And then that continued to manifest itself in other areas as well. So that was the first task, was that rebuilding the almost the emotional environment, not just the physical environment.
Shane, you said actually there was five needs you identified. We've got two of them. Was there any others?
Yeah, there were a few. So the unity was a strength, was certainly the one about the bringing the languages together, you know. And probably a little anecdote with that one is, as we spoke about using that skill. So there's a gift in Belgium. So if you ever go to Belgium, one of the things that will happen is the people from Belgium are incredibly gifted in language. And so when you go meet them, they'll speak to you in your language. And I said this to the players, you know, like, well, let's use this skill. And so when we play a team like France, let's do all of our game plan and our strategy on the field. Let's do it in Flemish. And then they don't know what's going on. And then when we play against Holland, let's do all of our game plan and strategy in French. And they don't know what's going on. I always have a joke. And then when we play Korea, well, don't worry about those guys because no one knows what's going on. But to the players, it was the first time that this had ever been presented in such a positive way. So again, it's just reinforcing that diversity that's always ever present in groups if you bring it out. The next one was better people. And this was a strategy that I tried to bring in because I know myself quite well, and I'm going into a new group. And basically my job task was to try and form a team in 10 months to get ready to go to the Olympic Games. And so when you get an appointment like that, you make a list of all the things that you'd love to have operating in your environment. And that, it's quite a creative type of list. But knowing myself, I thought, look, there's probably three or four that I can drive myself and have going well. But there's probably, you know, another 20 odd that I'd need help with. So what I what I did was I gave or set the new group a homework task. And this homework task was to try and force a conversation, because I'm a big believer in communicating with the athletes and trying to get as much information out of them as possible. And so I set this really simple homework task, and the task was for them to tell me what their starting 11 players would be for the Olympics if we were going in 2 weeks' time. Who would they pick? And the only criteria we asked with that was that they had to put them in that team. And then we would ask, or I would ask, a series of questions. And it's a really nice way to get the athletes to talk openly about their strengths. So I'd ask them, look, why have you put yourself in this position? You've selected yourself, for example, as a centre mid. And they'd talk about their strengths. I'm good at this. This is how I think I can contribute to the team, and this is where I would play, and so on. And then I asked them a little bit about the players around them. So you've put this player here. Tell me, why do you connect well with him? Why is he important? How does he make you play better? And you get a really nice information list about other players and how they're going. And what's coupled with that is at the end of the homework task, when I've interviewed all of the players, there's probably about four, maybe five players that appear on everyone's list. And it's, as a coach, that's great, because you don't have to discuss them anymore. Those players are in, you know, they're the glue, and they're the ones that you can rely on, because everyone enjoys playing with them, and there's reasons for that. And probably the next question that follows is I ask them to give themselves a rating out of 10 for where they feel are at in the group and stuff like that. And it's always the same number. They always say 7, and it's quite a good number, because I then follow it up with, okay, if you're a 7, what do you need from us as a coaching staff, me as a head coach, and all of our other support staff? What do you need from us to turn you from a 7 to an 8, or even better, a 9 or a 10? And it's a really nice intro for them, just talking about their needs. What do they need? What's the environment they want to be working in, and so on? So that's really very handy to have that type of information. And that leads me to the better people. At the end of this, I ask a difficult question, and I ask them, What do you bring to this group? You know, and because it's a coach sitting in front of them, they often talk about the sport themselves. They talk, oh, look, I run hard or I train hard. And I stop them there and I say, oh, look, I've asked you the wrong way. What I mean is, if we didn't select you, why would this place not be as great a place to work in? What do you bring? What do you offer to our working environment? And it's a hard one for athletes to come up with straight away. So this is where my list comes in. I say, look, if you can't think of something where you're contributing to the team in some sort of way, making it a better place, then you can have something from my list. And I give them a couple of days. None of them want to have a look at my list, I think, because they all come back and they all got these ideas of little projects that they can do to help the environment and shift us on. And there was one that had an incredible effect, a ripple on effect, and it illustrates that thing quite well. So there was a guy that was in the team and had been in the team for a while, but sat a little bit outside the main group. You know, like, he was a super nice guy, but he thought about things differently, and therefore, yeah, he certainly wasn't part of that main group. And he rings me quite late one evening. So it was about 11 o'clock at night, which is, even in Belgium and Europe, that's late. And he starts his conversation with, I'd like to have a small budget. And so I thought, okay, here we go. What's this all about? And he started to explain, and he said, I've got this friend that owns a fruit and vegetable store, and he would love to do something for the Belgium Red Lions, you know. And what I thought is that if I make an order and he delivers a whole lot of fruit and vegetables, if I can get a budget to buy a couple of big blenders, then I can make some smoothies on our double training day. So the guys would come in, I'd go out and I'd make some smoothies, put them on the table, and then they'd finish the shower. They'd come in, I'd go have a shower and join them later, and the smoothies are done. And I thought, wow, that's such a it's a great idea, great concept. It's very giving and selfless and sharing. I quite like that. And so we watched this unfold, and each day there was a double training session. He was inundated with players saying, oh, wow, that's, thank you so much. And it brought him much closer to the group. You know, they talked about the recipes and all that type of thing. And if that's all it was really enough. But the profound thing that I recognized was that in making those smoothies, he had to go out the back and he would work with the catering staff in preparing his smoothies. And he got an insider's view into how incredibly proud the catering staff were of preparing food for the Belgium Red Lions. You know, there was, they looked at them in awe. And so he fed that information back to the players. And again, we watched. And what we watched was players that used to just leave their plates, their knives and fork, all their cutlery there, and they'd go off, play cards, or they'd go and have a sleep before the second training. But we watched them change. And they went from being that person to picking up all their cutlery, taking it out the back, putting their plates in a certain area, putting their knives and forks in a different thing, and just trying to make the job as easy as possible for the catering staff, you know. And in a day like that, when you observe that, you recognize that circle of trust that we were talking about just actually grows a little bit bigger. It starts to capture the people in and around it. And the catering staff very much felt as if they were part of the Olympic journey. You know, when we won gold, they won gold. And it just was triggered by a very simple, kind act that grew and grew and grew. So I quite like sharing that story. It's very long, sorry, but it's a nice one just to understand that little things make massive changes somewhere along the line.
It's a great story, Shane. Thank you for sharing it. I mean, it talks to just the power of selflessness. You're doing something every day for somebody else. And the other idea in there too, of course, is the power of mealtimes as a mechanism to build connection. So thank you for sharing. Shane, could I talk a little bit about your style? You've been very open about the fact that when you started as a coach, it was all about relaying information quickly to someone to help them. And then it shifted. And you describe it as, you know, helping people discover answers for themselves. It was those are your words to describe the shift. The evidence in the power of that shift is in the course, the medals and the championships the team has won. But could I look at it from a different angle and just ask, did your shift as a coach, as the team leader, did that have any impact on the way people started to feel a sense of belonging within the team?
Yeah, a big part. Like the story or my coaching journey has a bit of a bump in the road, to be honest. Well, actually a fork in the road and then a bump in the road. So what I mean by that is when I first got an international gig, so how it came about was that I was an assistant coach that had come back from Europe to New Zealand to work with what I perceived as going to be my mentor over the next few years, trying to shape my career and get ready to take over a team. Very quickly, like within 6 months, he moved from the men's program to the women's program. He tells me it wasn't because of me, but it was very soon after I arrived. And what also coincided with that was there wasn't a great interest for other coaches to come in and take the team. So there was a series coming up in January in New Zealand. Holland were coming out. So Holland were the best team in the world at the time, or certainly one or two. And there was no one to lead the program. So what New Zealand Hockey did, they said, oh, look, Shane, can you step in and can you take the team for this particular series? And I said, sure. Look, I've got nothing to lose. This is the best team in the world. But I'm going to need help. And so what I did was I got all of the players to rally around, and I said, look, come on, let's design something that we're really proud of and that we can do together. And I was incredibly inclusive in what we did. And we came up with a very, very good game plan, but a very basic game plan, but everyone built it, you know. And so my first game in charge, we won. We beat Holland. And I'm not going to tell people that they were jet lagged or that they were quite fresh off the plane. All those things might have been in case, but we won. And that gave us some confidence. And we went on to have quite a lot of success all through 2006. And we qualified for the Olympics 2007, which is not a given for New Zealand, and went to Beijing. And everything was going pretty well. We were playing good hockey, and how I was doing my job, I was quite proud of. Then after Beijing, I had a chance to reflect on things, and I thought, look, no one else is going to take this. I love what I'm doing, but I'm going to have to do it better. And my thinking of that, what happened is I went from being very collaborative, I went very much into looking into the computer and studying and doing a whole lot of tactical awareness stuff. And because of that, I think I learned how to beat every team in the world. The problem that I had was that I had moved away from my players group and I lacked the ability to bring them with me. And so somewhere between 2008 and 2012, you never know the day it happens, but you never know the time it happens. But there was a shift, you know, and I didn't have that same connection with the players. And we had a devastating result in 2012 with the New Zealand men's team. We finished ninth out of 12 teams at the Olympics, which if you're ninth or around there, you're okay with. But I actually thought we had a much better team. And so that was my bump. And it was kind of a come to Jesus moment with myself. Look, I've got to do things differently. If I want to make a career in this, then I have to go back and do what I used to do, you know, bring players with me and get them to create with me. And so that's kind of shaped my philosophy. And now if I see young coaches or any coach going in that direction, I just really say, hey, be careful, you know, stay with your group, and the computer stuff is fine, but you're better off knowing your team than knowing a game plan, you know? And so, yeah, that was quite a big shift.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So building on that, Shane, and taking you then to your Belgian days, you've said that what you achieved in building the culture in that team has been a key driver of success. Can you say something about how you think about and define culture and what you see to be the key building blocks for a thriving culture?
Yeah, I think there's a few parts to it. Like it's a bit mysterious, you know, like if anyone can paint a perfect picture of what culture looks like, I'd love to buy that and hang it on the wall, because it's so varied and it means different things to different people. But what I try is I try a process, you know, like I think you build culture largely through trust and experiences. And quite a bit of it depends on the time frame. So, for example, if the three of us all of a sudden we were in the same room and we charged out the room and we said we're going to jump out of a plane together, you know, and because it's weird, because there's an element of, well, no, we're not going to do that, we're going to do it. That type of experience, if we shared that together, would bond us for life. You know, we would, whenever we'd run into each other or we'd hear from each other, we'd be triggered by this thing that we've done together. So for me, it's trying to create a whole lot of little things like that that build to that same bond, you know, and that same unity with your group. And so, yeah, for me, it's really 100 little things that makes that big thing. You know, we've done stuff with our Belgian Red Lions, like paragliding and a whole lot of different things. But the day-to-day stuff is also really important. So the training environment. So we work really hard to make the physical environment stimulating. You know, we talk about our role in aspiring the next generation. So we're giving some purpose to what we do beyond just the hockey, you know, without, you know, hockey's our tool to actually to reach a broader audience, you know, and we have some responsibility. We have to, we have to take every opportunity we can to promote our sport and promote the values that we strongly believe in, you know, and that has to be role modeled from top down to the bottom. So that's a little bit what I think about culture. But I truly understand the importance of it. And I truly understand that it's not something that you do and then you just tick a box and think our culture's built. It's constantly being worked at. And some of the things are tricks to see where you're at with your culture. You know, a simple example that I'll give you two simple examples. One is I always link into my players' Instagrams. So I've got about 14 followers, I believe it or not. That's a lot. But my players, they have tens of thousands. But what I watch is I watch what type of posts that they're doing. And when we've been working on our culture and our culture is in a really good place, what I see is I see them celebrating the success of other team members a lot, you know, and it comes to the forefront. When it's been a while or we've had a large break, what you start to see is some pictures of self-promotion or stuff in and around, oh, look, I've got a new sponsor and I've got a new watch. And it becomes very directed at the individual athlete. And so when that starts to happen, we know, look, we've got to do a bit more together. We need to revisit some of the values and we try to do it in creative ways. So that's one thing that I do. And the other thing is I set up compulsory habits with myself. And one that I have is every time I jump in a car, I ring a player. And it can be any of the players and for no particular reason. But sometimes I have a bit of a strategy. And if my strategy is to help a player feel more integrated into our culture, I'll ring them at a time when they really don't expect a call from me. And I'll try and connect with something that I've done recently that I find incredibly positive. For example, I might ring a player and say, look, I saw you play last week and I was really impressed with these elements of your game. I also saw that you did something, you were on the sideline helping one of the new players come into our team and doing a bit of coaching. And I'll encourage the behaviors that I think are really strong behaviors with that. And if you flip it around, a player that receives a coach from me, a call from the head coach, there's often that's nervous or I've done something wrong. And what I will often try and do is, no, you've done something right, you know, and make sure that we have a lot of big conversations along the way, so that if there is a tough conversation at the end, there's a balance, you know, they don't get scared anymore of me calling them and asking them if they want to go for a coffee and discuss how they're getting on. So those are a couple of culture things just to keep it working.
Shane, you've been leading Belgium since 2015, which in coaching terms is, well, I guess it's like 100 years, really. It's a long time. What impact do you think stability and leadership has on teams?
Oh, it's immense, you know. Like when I came in, I was the fifth coach in 4 years. And I put, you know, when I came in, we were lucky. I'm not going to say we were lucky to get results, but we went pretty quickly to number one in the world. And that came through a few things. And stability of coaching was very much part of that, you know. And I think when you're building a group of or a team of people, there are some things that need to change and freshen up. Even when a coach has been in there for a number of years, the coach changes and evolves as well. You know, like when I first took on the team, the expectation of the team was certainly not so high. And because we were operating number five, number six, number seven in the world, you always said someone to chase, you know, or someone to hunt. There was always someone above you. And then something happened, you know. By the time 2018 came around, we were silver in Rio and we won the gold medal in the World Cup in 2018. And all of a sudden we went from hunting to being hunted. And so you either... Or when that happens, things change in perspective, you know, like you start to search for something new to aspire to. Now, if you have longevity of a coach or stability of a coach, they can connect that journey, you know, they can see what the next step is and they can see the evolution. So I think that's really important. And also, you know, the safety in having a coaching staff that runs for a length of time, you know what the standards are. So, you know, when you come into a team, you know what's expected. And if you keep changing your coaches, there's always new expectations and that causes turmoil. So I think there are massive benefits with that continuity.
I have a quote here from you, Shane, that I'd like to explore. You say, "Learning how to give and receive feedback is as important as knowing how to give and receive a pass." It's beautiful in its simplicity. If someone listening wanted to get better at the skill of feedback, what would you tell them to do?
Talk often, you know. All those things that we've been discussing so far, they have a flow-on effect. You know, the having coffees with your players, the speed dating, all the homework tasks, all of these things are kind of ways to set up that line of communication, you know. And why that is important is that, let me put it another way. I have some very hard conversations with people, very direct and often very hard to hear. And they're almost impossible to hear if there's not a balance. As I said, if the only time I talk to my player is to tell them off or tell them bad news, that's not giving and receiving feedback. That's just critiquing, you know. And so when we have all of these conversations, when I have the tougher ones, the players genuinely know that I have their best interest at heart. You know, they know that I'm working towards having them at the Olympic Games or having our team performing at their very best. There's no hidden agendas. They know the honesty in what we do. Now, to get there, I also have to display the same qualities that I expect from my athletes. And so one of the tasks that we would often do is sit in a circle like this, and I will be the first to be critiqued. And we set this up for the first time again with my assistant coach. And this one was a really simple task. Again, we just had to say a couple of things about what we're doing well at the moment in the environment, and then one critique, you know, and that's quite simple. So he had said to me, this is what I'd like to say. What do you think? I said, okay, it's good. And I'll role model how I have to respond to that. And he said to me, look, the players are really enjoying your positive environment you're creating. The training sessions have picked up immensely, and the quality and the trainings are going really well. But there is an area that you're doing that causes some concern. You have a tendency to put it in extra training sessions when players have planned their week out, and then all of a sudden there'll be an extra training or something put in, and that disrupts them. And so they have wives and things like that, and it disrupts their family, and then they end up copping it a couple of ways because of they can't do something or something like that. And if you could do something to amend that would be really good. So my role as a listener was really simple. Thank you for your feedback. You're right. You can say why you do something, but you don't apologize. You can apologize for doing something, but you work very hard to rectify it. So what I would say is, yeah, look, I do that. And the reason I do that is I'm just looking for little gains and little opportunities, and I have to stop doing that. And so for me, it's a self-correction. For them, it's the coaching staff, they make mistakes. They're a bit vulnerable as well. Then they're a lot more open in how they talk with each other. And so, you know, that's just a very simple way of learning teams how to do things is by role modeling them yourself.
Shane, that's fascinating. And maybe to kind of play Shane McLeod back to you again on another quote and help us unpack this one. So you've said, one of my coaching beliefs is that success is a byproduct of doing a whole lot of things well. If you just focus on winning and losing, it's too binary. Most of the development happens between the extreme highs of winning and losing. Can you just talk us a little bit about what you're touching on there, the values that sit behind this kind of belief?
Yeah, so how that came about was, thought was made stronger is after the winning the World Cup, we actually did a tour to New Zealand. And New Zealand's a beautiful country, and it's my country. So you can imagine how incredibly excited and proud I was going to be bringing the Belgium Red Lions world champions to New Zealand to play some games. And also how incredibly proud I was of New Zealand to show it at its best to the team that was coming over to see them. And we had set up a series of games, and we had flown in. We're a bit jet-lagged, a bit like Holland, and we played up against New Zealand. And no, not New Zealand. We played India the first game, and we played okay, but we lost. Then the next game, and so when we got back to the hotel, the guys were complaining about everything. Oh, we're staying in this hotel. It's from the 1920s. There's nothing. There's no people live in New Zealand. There's nothing to do. Look at all the sheep. They only have sheep here. Everything was negative. 2 days later, we played a game, and we didn't play fantastic, but we played better and we won. Then all of a sudden, the conversation was more, oh, look, I found this place down the road, great coffee. After training, we can go have a swim. It's beautiful nature. And everything was fantastic again. Then the next game was the opposite. And so we were swinging from great to not great, and it was really binary. And we sat as a coaching staff, and we tried to unpack that. And where we'd gone wrong was we hadn't explained what the process of the trip was. And where the players were confused was that they couldn't place if we were after high performance and performing every game, or if we were after developing. And it was very much a development tour. So as a coaching staff, we knew that. And so we were riding those highs and lows. We weren't affected by it, but the players were. And so what became really important from then on was just that, taking them through each part of the journey and explaining what are we after, where are we trying to make gains. And what we noticed that was really valuable was the longer we were able to keep our team in development zone, the higher they were able to peak in the performance zone. You know, so rather than this up-down type of response, we actually got this development, performance type of thing, you know. And so that's kind of what reinforced that belief, you know.
And can you say something about one of the techniques I think you've used, 3D Playbook, to help teams bring their values to life? Can you just talk a little bit about this one?
Yeah, so how this came about was, you know, we often stay in a hotel and we'd be sitting in a meeting room very similar to this meeting room. And because hockey can't buy the whole hotel and just have one team to stay there, you're often staying with a whole lot of other teams, you know, the team from Germany and Holland and things like that. And you will follow them into the meeting room. So one of the things that's happened is that in the past I've found an Australian playbook, I've found a Dutch playbook, a German playbook, and a Welsh playbook, but you don't have to worry about Wales. They're not up to too much. I told that joke in a presentation one time. At the end of the presentation, this Welsh lady came up and introduced herself, saying she was from Wales. So I have to be very careful for listeners from Wales. It is a joke. I haven't found a Welsh one. But some really big information in there. So I've sworn to myself, look, I'm not going to make a playbook, but you need to expose your players to strategy and things like that. So what we did was we set up or made a three-dimensional playbook, and that was a room. And around the room, we would put all of our strategies, our penalty corners, all of our values and those type of things. Often the homework tasks, after I've made notes and stuff like that, I'd put them on there as well. And in there would be also the coffee machine. So that's one of the most used pieces of equipment in the whole place, because it's a place where they always meet. They'll come in early, they'll have a coffee before training and sit and talk, have physio and things like that. But we also used it for one of the five things that I talked about earlier, and that was lifting expectation. And in the past, Belgian players, if they were going to play Holland, it was not uncommon that you would see one of our players asking them for an autograph before the game. You know, they looked up to them in such admiration, and then they'd lose 10-0. So we tried to correct that, and so we had these photos made. Well, they weren't made, they were taken, but we'd blow them up, and we'd blow them up to poster size, and they were posters of the Belgian players succeeding against Australia, Germany and Holland, and they were surrounded, they surrounded the walls. And so every day that we had training, the players would come in, they could see what everyone's working on, they could see our strategy, but they also had this impression that we are dominating those countries, you know, and that visual stimulus was incredible. And so amazing that, you know, there's a photo of Belgium playing against Holland. That's one of my favorite photos. And there's this cluster of players coming together in this circle. It's incredibly tight, and it's taken within 10 seconds of the final whistle in the semi-final in Rio. And it's all of the Belgian players, every player that was on the field, plus all of the players that were subbing. Everyone ran to this point. And why I love it, it's so symbolic of what we would say the circle of trust is. But the second thing that's really amazing about that picture, or why it's special, is that was the first time Belgium had ever beaten Holland, you know, and not in 10 years or 20 years, in the entire history of hockey, field hockey. But on the morning before that game, Belgium wanted to play them. And what we put that down to is that subliminal messaging every day that, you know, you're better. You've got these guys. And Yeah, and it was fantastic to see the confidence in which they went into that game because of what we had set up.
Shane, I've heard you talk about your coaching philosophy, which you summarise as, quote, the personal development, well-being and enjoyment of athletes and teams, end quote. And it's the first part of that I wanted to explore with you, personal development. And I'm wondering if you could share the routines that you have to help your athletes learn and develop.
Yeah, so we work on a bit of a premise, and we did a study, and the study was kind of how many hours can we control? So how much, how long are they in our weekly program? And it's such a small amount. Like it's 20% of their total week we have contact with them. And that's high for an international program. We know that. So what we try to do is we try to provide the very best that we can in that 20%. But there's an acknowledgement that it's the 80% that we can get the biggest benefits. And so we work very hard to make the athlete the center of their development. And we try and present them the tools to try and for them to not coach themselves, but to drive what they need. And so when a new athlete comes into our program, we've set up kind of like three generations. We have the statesmen that have been to two or three Olympics now. We have those that have been to one. And then we have new players that come in. And it's kind of like a conveyor belt. And each of those groups have to bring the next lot on. And they take a lot of pride in how they do that. So what we do as a coaching staff is we have to try and get an athlete to have some understanding of what they need and what firstly gets them into a performance state. And that can be as simple as, do you perform better if you eat rice or pasta in a pre-game meal? Do you play well if you have an evening game, if you have an afternoon sleep, or are you better to stay right through? All those type of things athletes need to become aware of, and they need to start building up routines. And if you have a good nutritional routine, if you have a good sleep routine, if you have a good game preparation type of thing and knowledge about that, then you start leading that and you start providing that for yourself. And so that's a big part of our endeavor, is to enable athletes to, you know, take charge. And then we become a resource rather than us pulling them along. They pull us along, and we try and keep up and provide everything they need in behind. And so we found it a really positive way to do it. And probably when players come in, we've tested how long their readiness for international hockey is. And we've got it down to between 16 and 18 months from a newbie coming into being able to represent the country on a regular basis. And that's really impressive. And that's in big part is that 80-20 type of rule, working very hard that they do a great job in that 20 and that 80%.
Shane, I know it's getting late over there in Spain, so maybe just one last question, if I could. You talk about the power of telling the story of growth as it's happening rather than after it's happened. It's an interesting idea, and I'm wondering if you could just tell us a little bit more about this idea and how it's experienced by the team.
Yeah, I like telling stories with the players, and partly because I think it covers off so many things. So it lets the players have a glimpse into who you are and what you believe and your little world, you know. And you know, maybe I'm a bit too sharing with that, but I think it's important. I think that's part of that vulnerability and that getting them to understand a little bit of what it brings to me to be involved with the group, you know. And so I often will tell a story. The story is designed to connect them, to bring everyone to the same type of place. And I'll give you an example. So the World Cup, which was in India. Leading into that, we'd won silver in Rio, but we hadn't won anything. And there's an immense amount of pressure when you haven't won something, but it's just around the corner. Everyone's expecting it, and that doesn't always help. Often that can hinder. And so we were in India, and India is a fantastic place for hockey. You know, we would drive to the hockey ground, which was like, it looked like a temple lit up all at night, and it's golden in color and things like that. And we'd drive there. And when we got there, I was always first off the bus, and I would jump off, and they hit this corridor, and you walk through this corridor, and on the side, there's a whole lot of pictures of past winners and all of the highlights of previous World Cups and things like that. And I walked through there, and I loved it. It was really interesting. And then at the bottom, there was this kind of the square and a question mark. And I looked down at that, looked at the ground, looked down at that. And as I walked on, I had this feeling or this thing come into my mind, could this be us? You know, could that question mark be our next picture? Or could we be the picture in the question mark? And I thought, that's a weird thing to feel and stuff. And then I watched the other players come back. And when you're watching a group of players in twos and threes, they're laughing and a lot of chatter and a lot of fun. And they were watching the same pictures. And then they saw the square, the same square that I saw. And when they saw it, they fell silent. And they would walk past me and into the changing room. And there'd be a silence and a focus as they went until I joined them. And so I thought, wow, this is something that bonds us. You know, we all have this feeling. And if we can collectively put it together, it's going to be useful. And so I told them, actually three stories on the day that we played the World Cup, and they were short stories. The first was about my wife bringing our middle child to the creche for when I was in India. And each night she'd ring up and say, I'd ring, and she, or either of us would ring and say, how'd it go today? Yeah, I took Emma to the creche, and she cried. And I was thinking, well, I'm quite glad I'm in India, because otherwise I'd be taking her. And that happened Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. But on Friday when I spoke, I said, how'd it go today? And she said, oh, no, Emma didn't cry, but I cried. And I told that to the players, and I said that, you know, it's kind of like us. You know, you need it. You used to need us all the time, but you don't need us so much anymore. You know, when you go out on the field, you've got this. You know what to do. You know what's expected. You know, all of the behavioral things, you're going to be fine. Good luck and enjoy it. And the second story I told was about our second keeper. And we were playing really well, and our semi-final was against England. And our second keeper always wants to play. And we were leading the game 6-0 with 15 minutes to go. And so I walked over to him and I said to him, look, are you ready? And he looked me in the eyes and said, well, what do you mean? I said, well, if you want to play, you can play. And he looked back, and it was a look I've never experienced with him before. He said, look, you know, I would love to play, but it's not right. You know, we're about to go into the final. Our Vincent, our number one keeper, he's playing so well. Why would we even think about making a change here? And so I shared that with the group, because I thought, look, there's no better symbolic way of representing, you know, putting the team's values in front of his own personal values. And I thought the team should understand that, because they're not only caring what they're doing on the field, they're caring other people, and he was certainly one of them. And the last story I told them was the story of Slumdog Millionaire, and it's a fantastic movie. You should see it if you haven't seen it. But the premise of it is this: the journey of a young boy going through the slums, and he gets on this game show, and he knows, because of weird turns his life's taken, he knows all of the questions except for the very last one. But he knows, because everything he's done has led him to that point, whatever letter he says, it's going to be right. And again, I said, it's a bit like us. You know, everything that we've done has led us to this point. We don't know the result yet, but we all know that we're going to win. You know, and now we just have to make sure the stars are aligned and we go out and experience it. And we finished that game 0-0, but our guys were kind of cheering. They kind of knew that we were going to win the shootout, and what the stories had done, it had brought us together, but it had taken away that worry. It had been more an excitement about what we were going to do. So, yeah, I think there's some power in those type of things.
Shane, it's been an absolute masterclass this evening. It's so exciting listening to you, and you have such a wonderful, quiet, understated but motivating manner. And I thank you so much for agreeing to spend an hour with us and sharing the story of your journey and the journey of your team.
It's a pleasure. I enjoyed it.
You're listening to the Great Coaches Podcast.
Eric, that was a fantastic interview with Shane. What were some of the things that stood out for you?
Yeah, it was fascinating. I mean, I was sitting there thinking about something which obviously you cleared onto, Paul, which was those dining room routines. Because it just reminds me, and there's actually a whole bunch of research on this. A bunch of research at Cambridge University went and studied the dining rooms of Cambridge University colleges. And what they worked out is that you could see in the way in which those dining rooms were run and the routines around meal service, the historical legacy of the British class system. And, you know, the implication of that research is that the bigger concepts and ideas can be seen in the small practices and the everyday actions, which is exactly what Shane was talking about, that it seems really mundane, but actually it speaks to something much bigger, putting the team first, service culture, you know, pride in the, you know, in the jersey and in playing for Belgium. And I think you can't underestimate the power of routines as symbols for something that's much larger, which I thought came through really strongly in what Shane was talking about.
I think there's this idea in there too, isn't there, of selflessness. He gave a couple of stories that just illustrated the way that had come to life. There was the story, of course, of the smoothies and that great story he shares at the end there about the reserve goalkeeper.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if I think about you know, some other things that stood out for me. You know, we talked about stability, and obviously stability and routines are connected, because in a way, if you can get to a routine and you make that routine stable, it frees up your emotional capacity and your responsiveness to all the other things that are unexpected. You know, and I think, you know, Ben, Darwin and a couple of others have talked about this, but stability, I think, is a vital, and routines are a vital element of team performance, because people need a certain level of predictability in order to feel comfortable, to feel safe. And that is, you know, a base for higher performance.
I love the idea he had in there too about shared experiences versus, and this is my parentheses, team building. He sort of drilled into this fact that we're going to do things as a team, and it'll be an experience that we'll talk about later. And I just reflected on that, and it seemed much more powerful and team affirming than just going whitewater rafting or, you know, going off site and building, making pizzas together, which is quite often what a lot of people listening will have done with their own teams.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, look, the sort of research for me comes together with concepts that we have around, I mean, what they call in the literature sense making, individual sense making and collective sense making. But the guts of it is that, you know, stories are really powerful. And if that story is not just the story that one person tells, but multiple people share, it becomes part of an oral tradition, then it's much more binding, much more connecting between the various people who were participants in that story, who did it together and can relive that experience. It's like going back and watching a movie again and again. It gets you into a particular place, and it's a story that we remember and we can all relate to.
Maybe just one final idea to talk to you about was this, in Shane's language, he talked about compulsory habits, which I hadn't heard before, and I found that interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose it goes back a little bit to routines and how to kind of, you know, bring into your everyday habits or into your everyday actions the values and the beliefs that you want to live by at a high level. I think it's a very mindful way of thinking about leadership, and certainly one of the things that I think underpins some of what Shane was talking about, but you know, you could make more explicit, is the extent to which, you know, and this is part of the journey he talked about in his own coaching style, you know, the transition from just thinking about the numbers and the analytics to thinking about the emotions and the sense of and the feelings that the team wants to embody. So that it's not just about the plays, but it's also about the players and the relationship they have with each other and their sense of trust, their sense of belief. That, in a way, I think, comes through very strongly in the sorts of exercises, activities, mindsets that Shane's trying to cultivate in his teams.
Eric, another good interview as we continue our exploration of thriving teams. I look forward to doing it all again with you next week.
Yeah, let's chat about the next one.
Thanks, Eric.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish. But you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast. So everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.